And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, how was the rally that you went to on the No Kings rally day that turned out many more people than the last No Kings rally, right?
Yeah, I was impressed. First of all, I was impressed by its organization. They much better way of doing things. First of all, they had three groups had tents set up, and they were taking names and to either register people or to just get names for the organization, and that's important.
Mm-hmm.
There were no Republican tents there this time.
Mm-hmm.
The size of the crowd was very good.
Mm-hmm.
I estimated 1,500 to 2,000.
Mm-hmm.
The newspaper had up to 1,500.
We're talking about Scranton.
Scranton, right. Yeah. And it was a cold day,
mm-hmm.
but people showed up, and a lot of them brought their own handmade signs.
Mm-hmm.
These weren't groups that were handing out signs that looked like they were handmade. You saw people getting out of their cars, mm-hmm. dragging their signs with them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The rally itself, the speakers, they had a better sound system,
mm-hmm.
much better sound system, so people could hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And they it went smoothly with the speakers they had.
Mm-hmm.
They had five speakers, and they touched on things. The crowd was attentive. They hung around. Even after the rally, people were hanging around.
Mm-hmm.
So how
long did it last? How long did your rally last?
A little over an hour.
Mm-hmm.
A little over an hour. By about 12:15, the formalities were done. If
mm-hmm.
Bill Gaughan, the county commissioner, hadn't talked that long, it would have been a little bit less.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple of underlying themes besides the No Kings theme, which you saw in a lot of the posters were directed at that. But the other two things were billionaires,
mm-hmm.
attacks on billionaires, and then attacks on the war.
Mm-hmm.
There was an undercurrent of no war theme.
Mm-hmm.
The speakers didn't really hit the no war theme very hard. They hit Trump harder, but there were mentions of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it went pretty well. And it was a very mellow crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Different, Scranton, of course, it's going to tend a little bit older,
mm-hmm.
but there were younger people there. I noticed the TV coverage. The people they interviewed were mostly, I would say, younger. I'm thinking of, 20, 30-ish.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see a lot of college kids there, but I'm sure there were some.
Mm-hmm.
How about you?
Well, I come from I'm in a very small county. It's rural. It doesn't have many people. The total population is 38,000. There are twice as many more than twice as many registered Republicans as there are Democrats, and nearly three times more registered Republicans than there are Democrats. And Trump got a gigantic majority in this county. And in that respect, it's like a lot of rural counties in Pennsylvania. We have 42 of the 67 counties are rural counties. But this demonstration was larger than the one that preceded it. I would say that the one that preceded it probably had about 150 people, and we may have had 250 people at this one. The people who were there were a lot of young people, people in their 20s and 30s, and they had never been, and other people besides that group, whom I had not seen at the previous two demonstrations. when you're only dealing with a few hundred people, you can recognize people. So from that viewpoint, it was growing. The Democratic County Commissioner was present. Actually, the Democratic Party organized this thing, although they didn't call it in the name of the Democratic Party. It lasted from about 1 o'clock to about 3 o'clock. It was bitterly cold, very cold. It was in the 20s with a wind. And nonetheless, people stayed. They didn't disappear until the speaking was done. A lot of names were signed of people who wanted to participate in activities. I would say dozens and dozens of people signed up, which greatly increases the number of people on various mailing lists of politically active people in the county. And much to my surprise, there was a whole contingent from Binghamton University that came down to, and two of the students spoke, and I would say the best received speech of the rally was by one of these students. And the tone of the speeches, the content of the speeches, both by the Binghamton University person and other speakers, because there were about five or six speakers, mainly defensive immigrants, attacking racism, attacking Trump, and attacking the war. So it was a very interesting event.
You know, two things that you mentioned. One, people stuck around.
Yeah.
It wasn't that cold in Scranton. The sun was out. The wind wasn't howling. And so it wasn't nearly as cold as I had anticipated or what you had. But number two, you mentioned Democratic officials. Now, this was not a Democratic Party event.
No.
This was sponsored by another group. There were, I saw at least three Democratic office holders. Bill Gaughan, the county commissioner, spoke. Interestingly, the other Democratic county commissioner, Tom Welby, did not speak. Neither did his patron, or he didn't show up, really. Hmm. Neither did his patron, the state senator, Marty Flynn.
Mm-hmm.
However, the state reps the four Democratic state reps were well represented. I saw two of them in person, and they mentioned that the other two were there somewhere. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Maybe most notable in absence was the Democratic congressional candidate, Paige Cognetti, who didn't show up. I'm not sure why. I speculate, but and we didn't see anything there for her. There were people that did attack her opponent, Congressman Bresnahan, mm-hmm. And I think everybody there knew that. But there was just additional observations that I made.
In the meanwhile,
just let me say that the person my guru that I always mention, Ruth Ben-Ghiat, professor, who on authoritarianism, said that this is the thing that authoritarians, autocrats, fear the most, that they that not only are the crowds, but they're growing crowds,
right.
And this crowd was quite peaceful, mellow. Mm-hmm. There were a couple of policemen, Scranton cops, just walking around, very casual. Nobody mm-hmm. seemed to have any apprehensions or anything. Now, someone mentioned to me that they saw an ICE vehicle on one of the side streets. I did not see that, and there were no recorded incidents of ICE trying to mm-hmm. grab somebody at the rally, and I don't think that there's any way that they could have known at that point
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Who was there, who wasn't there. It was a good day, and they were pushing that Wilkes-Barre has a rally on April Fool's Day this week.
Mm-hmm.
So. We'll see. I don't know when the next you know, the next No Kings rally is going to be during better weather. So we'll see what happens.
In the meanwhile, the Trump administration, in the teeth of these rallies, growing as or not growing, is, according to reporting by the Washington Post, by the Wall Street Journal, by the Associated Press, by Axios, preparing to send 10,000 troops to Iran and planning for land operations as soon as they get them there. That was over the weekend. That was reported over the weekend. So that's in the teeth of Trump saying, that's just what I'm not doing, right?
Right. Well,
the more he says I'm not doing it, the more certain you can be. That's exactly what he's doing.
You know, he changes from day to day and from hour to hour as to what's happening. He'll say the negotiations are going good, and then he'll say they're not. You know, the Iranians say there's not even negotiations.
Right.
It's just hard to follow. Remember, he said he gave them 48 hours.
Right.
Or else he was going to bomb their electrical supplies. And then he had the taco effect. And then he said, no, it's going to be 5 days. Now it's up to 10 days. Now, whether he's just buying time to get his, get our troops in place, no one knows. No one knows. No one knows what he's going to do when in the middle of the night tonight or tomorrow, except he's going to send out messages on Truth Social that may or may not make sense.
But the weird thing is, if he really concentrates 10,000 troops, he doesn't have the infrastructure. He doesn't have the logistics to support 10,000 troops. He doesn't have the ammunition in place to support 10,000 troops. It's very peculiar.
Yeah, but our Secretary of quote unquote war has the rhetoric. As if the rhetoric, and there are some reports that his inner circle there that's pushing what's happening did not think this thing all the possibilities through. They just felt we go in with this overwhelming bombing and take out the leadership and they're going to cave. And didn't happen. They don't understand the mentality of the Iranian fanatics that are running the country. They're not going to give up. They'll go down with the ship. They'll just get more and more fanatical. The only thing is there's fewer and fewer of them.
First of all, they're not so fanatical in terms of the war, because the military doctrine that they're pursuing is one that the United States teaches at West Point. It's called irregular warfare. And the central lesson of irregular warfare is that it takes a long time. It can only work if you have a long, drawn-out war, and that it starts out with the side that's pursuing the strategy of irregular warfare being extremely weak and growing in strength through fighting. It could take years. So the fact that that there are fewer Iranians in the field right now than there were before is irrelevant, because the doctrine takes into account that that's how it works. I think that none of these people have studied the doctrine of irregular war. Don't believe, if they had read any of the writings on it, they don't believe it or can't imagine it. They really don't have imagination to understand how this works. And they really ought to do is try to study the experience of the Japanese in World War II in China, where they occupied every single large city and had strong points on every road every few miles. And Mao Zedong started with a fighting force of 10,000 and ended up with a fighting force of 4 million, but it took him 6 years. And yet, I imagine that at home, the Japanese generals were chortling about how much they could and how secure China was. So the fact that that the Iranians are in the minority, that they lost firepower at the moment, doesn't have very much to do with anything, because their doctrine takes that into account. And the American doctrine doesn't take their doctrine into account. Now, I have no sympathies for the Iranian government. It's a horrible government that has a horrible society and ought to be overthrown by its people. But the American government is just as bad. You cannot imagine American fascism any different, or Christian nationalism any different than the Sharia-type law that the Muslim fundamentalists impose on Iran. But the salvation for the Iranian people does not lie through American government intervention.
Well, you mentioned something. I think the difference between Japan and Germany was that the government, you know, Hitler had the popular support, and the Japanese fell in line, you know, with their militarists and the emperor, who was more of a figurehead at that point. But the Iranians are not a popular government. The mullahs aren't popular. But what this war seems to have done is it seems to have quieted the dissent, probably because people don't want to come out where they have the possibility of getting bombed.
Well, the mullahs are not popular. The government is unpopular, and it ought to be overthrown. But the mullahs do have the support of 25% of the population. And there's 90 million Iranians.
Yeah.
And if they've got the support of a quarter of 90 million, that's a lot of people.
Well, they also have the Revolutionary Guard,
who's probably
running the country at this point.
Yeah. And you cannot overthrow the government without an organization. Let's face it, organizations are required. The fact that you got one guy who makes a speech, that's not enough. That doesn't do it. What's his name? Hegseth may believe that wars are won by Rambo, but wars are not won by Rambo, and you can't overthrow a government with Rambo. The days of Samson or David beating Goliath or Samson pulling down the temples, if it ever happened, it ain't happening today.
So, you know, we talked about no kings. We have a bunch of, on other topics, jokers or court jesters, known as the Congressional Republicans.
Right.
This week, we saw it, you know, seeing what happened. With all the problems at the airports, huge lines and the dissatisfaction of people who are caught in transit, being on television all the time, or people just knowing about it because there's so many people who travel. The Senate came to a compromise, a bipartisan compromise, where they agreed to some of the Democratic idea that we're not, that we would take ICE out of the funding for the DHS bill, although they still haven't negotiated anything with regard to the Democratic complaints. And it passed overnight, and the Senate went home. And it got over to the House, and Speaker Johnson, who really is Charlie McCarthy to Donald Trump's Edgar Bergen, if people can remember that analogy, wouldn't even bring the bill up to the floor. I talk about being tone deaf. This, you know, the Republicans have been trying to pin this shutdown on the Democrats. And by this one act, they've told people, we, the Republicans, own it. We own the shutdown.
Right.
We're not doing anything about it. And he compounded the felony by attacking the Senate, which is not a smart thing to do. The Senate has pride. And the Senate considers itself to be the better house of Congress. And but he did do one thing, which was he created, like everybody else has created, a special prize for the president called the America First Prize. And he said, of course, the first recipient of the America First Prize is going to be Donald Trump. There's one comedian reacted, said, yeah, he'll be the second award winner and the third award winner and whatever. This is, you know, just another extension of the cult of Donald Trump And you mentioned to me we had a couple of other things this week regarding currency about Donald Trump as
Yeah,
well.
they're going to put Donald Trump's signature on the on our currency for the first time in American history. No living president has ever signed the currency. Not Washington, not Lincoln, not Roosevelt, nobody.
Yeah, it's usually the Secretary of the Treasury and the Treasurer of the United States.
Right, exactly
who
right.
signed it.
Right.
Who signed it. And this one's going to have Donald J. Trump sign it. I've already seen people say, take a Sharpie and cover it over. I'm not sure if that's true.
And here's something I don't understand. Maybe you could explain it. Doesn't Trump control the Kennedy board? The Kennedy Center
Yes.
in Washington,
but the Kennedy, you mean the Trump Kennedy Center
the
now?
Trump Kennedy Center, exactly right. He controls that board. So, yeah. Bill Maher is going to get the award for best comedic work of the year from the Trump Kennedy Center, even though the Trump White House and Carolyn Leavitt in particular said inconceivable, can't happen, won't happen. And 3 days after she said it, they gave it to him. Now, how do you account for that? I got nothing for Bill Maher. I'm just curious about this.
Like I said, jokers and jesters. A lot of times the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. Who knows? Who knows? Remember, Bill Maher went to the White House and he had Donald Trump sign a sheet of paper of all the epithets that Donald had labeled Bill Maher with. Like I said, it's not, you can't explain this stuff because they're all jokers. And speaking of jokers, by the way, Kash Patel did it again this week.
All right.
We found out that he had a private phone that he was using at times on government business, and it got hacked.
Just like
by the Iranians, who posted some of his messages. So he couldn't deny that it had been hacked.
But wait a minute. Wasn't Hillary Clinton threatened with being put in prison for doing exactly that?
Yes. But, of course, Kash Patel doesn't have to worry because, you know, Pam Bondi is the attorney general who won't prosecute anybody for any of their crimes in this administration. She'll only try to prosecute Democrats that Donald Trump has told her to prosecute.
But she's not able to do it. I mean, she's incompetent.
No. Yeah. Or U.S. attorneys are incompetent, like Jenny Pirro. Yeah. Or Lisa Halligan, who isn't even in the government anymore.
The guy in upstate New York.
Yeah. And how about that one revelation that they had to go before the court and U.S. attorney and say, the information that we gave you, was it from DHS, wasn't accurate?
When things are not accurate, that means they're false, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The things that we said weren't happening were happening or something right. like that. I don't remember the exact.
Well, they did even better than that. They cited cases and citations in cases that didn't exist. The cases didn't exist. And in cases that did exist, the citations didn't exist. It was all made up. And yet they swore before the court that this was true. Now, isn't that a crime? I'm not a lawyer, but I suppose lawyers are supposed to tell the truth.
Well, yeah, it's sanctionable. There's a specific rule that when you file a pleading in court and sign it, that you are attesting to its veracity. And as I said, some of the that's why the Justice Department has tried to say that bar associations or state bars cannot sanction their attorneys. Which isn't true because you get your license through the state.
But wait a minute, let's go through that. You can't, the state attorneys, the state bars shouldn't have authority over the people that they license when the people lie.
Well, that's what the Justice Department is saying.
And the theory of that is lying is regular?
Well, the theory is that the Justice Department lies outside the purview of the state bars, which isn't true.
So who, but let's assume it is true. So who's supposed to police the lie?
Again, this is something that the framers never contemplated. When you have a justice, when the power to prosecute is solely within the Justice Department, and the Justice Department is in the hands of people who are potentially corrupt.
But what you mean is liars? Liars. That's what we're talking about. Lying.
Liars. And,
lying. Making things up.
Well, that becomes perjury too, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think
under oath.
What do I know? I'm not a
lawyer.
That's what they
went after Bill Clinton for, lying under oath, perjury.
That's right. I thought it was that.
But it's them, you know. It's them.
So in the face of all of this, is there any wonder that Trump's support has cratered? That on the issues, no matter what the issue is, if you take the 10 most important issues as revealed by polling, on every one of those issues, support for Trump's position doesn't exist. It's limited to his most extreme base in most cases. 18%, 20%, as much as 30% in some cases.
Yeah.
But nearly in every case, 60% to two-thirds of the people of the United States oppose what he stands for, right?
Yeah.
And among the Hispanics, where they were saying that he was gaining support, or he gained support in the last election, only 28% of Hispanics now support him. And that means that, 78% oppose him? 72% oppose him? More than two-thirds, almost three-quarters.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that quite remarkable?
Well, it is. And which that, is why, well, first of where, all.
Where's the mandate? What happened to the mandate?
Well, the mandate is in the small circle of sycophants that surround him. 100% of them, Trump, if I can use the term, 72% of the populace.
Yeah.
And that's why I think you're going to see an acceleration of them trying to do as much harm as possible as soon as possible, because they're now seeing that not only is the House in jeopardy going, but the Senate is as well. You have Maine, Ohio, Alaska, North Carolina's probably gone to them already, and potential, although I'll believe it when I see it, Texas. And if that happens, and we're gonna see them try to do more things. That's why they're trying to get this SAVE Act passed desperately to blunt the anti-Trump vote.
Yeah. Well, I can't imagine that the Senate vote that the House refused to take up on the funding of the DHS, which Cornyn voted for, is going to help Cornyn in the election. Because Trump opposed it, right?
Yeah, yeah. Consequences.
Consequences. Maybe that's what we should say this is all right. About. Consequences, yeah.
Well, we've got April Fool's Day coming up this week.
All right.
And we certainly have fools that are there every month, not just April.
Exactly, unfortunately. Well, we'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.